Ich möchte dieser Community hier gerne was zurückgeben. Deswegen lade ich dich ein zur einmaligen kostenfreien Masterclass What If, in der ich dir zeige, wie du die Kraft deines Unterbewusstseins für dich nutzt, um Herausforderungen zu meistern, Resilienz aufzubauen und deine Träume Wirklichkeit werden zu lassen. Finde heraus, was alles möglich ist. Am 28. Januar um 19 Uhr. Du kannst dich jetzt noch kostenfrei anmelden unter www.sarahdesai.de/what-if. Ich packe dir den Link natürlich nochmal in die Shownotes. Hey, wie schön, dass du wieder hier am Start bist bei den Mindful Sessions, bei deinem Podcast für mehr Achtsamkeit und Soul Power. Und heute gibt es eine Premiere, denn heute wird es hier jetzt die erste Podcast-Folge in den Mindful Sessions auf Englisch geben. Du kannst dir die Podcast-Folge auch auf YouTube, auf meinem Kanal Sarah Desai, mit deutschen Untertiteln anschauen, wenn du magst. Und ansonsten ja einfach auf Englisch lauschen. Und für diese Premiere habe ich natürlich einen ganz besonderen Interviewgast eingeladen. Und zwar niemand anderen als John Strelacki. Ihr kennt ihn bestimmt, du kennst ihn bestimmt als Autor des Buches Das Café am Rande der Welt, das wurde in, ich glaube, 42 Sprachen übersetzt. Und er hat noch ganz viele andere Bestseller geschrieben. Er ist internationaler Speaker und Schöpfer des Konzeptes The Big Five for Life. Und ich will gar nicht mehr vorwegnehmen. Ich freue mich wahnsinnig, dass er hier ist. Und wir werden darüber sprechen, wie wir Erfüllung finden im Leben. Wie schaffen wir es, ein erfülltes Leben zu leben, eins, auf das wir zurückblicken und aus vollem Herzen sagen und mit voller Überzeugung sagen und mit einem Lächeln im Gesicht sagen, ja, genau so wollte ich leben. Ja, das ist mein Leben. Und wir wollen gar keine Zeit mehr vergeuden. Hier geht's jetzt direkt los mit dem Interview. Hey John, I am more than happy. I'm super excited to have you here as a guest in the podcast. And I want to say a warm hello and a warm thank you for taking your time.
Thanks, Sarah. It's great to be here. Great to see you. And I've been looking forward to this all week. So I'm so happy that we get a chance to talk.
Thank you. For other people who are just listening, not watching, I can see you are sitting in a cafe, which looks quite like the cafe on the edge of the world. Is it the same cafe?
It's true, actually. Yes. So as part of one of the big projects that I've got going on, which is a movie about the cafe on the edge of the world. So that announcement came out a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago. As part of that work of figuring out, okay, so what is the cafe going to look like in the movie? We were doing some work and I was like, hey, I would really love to have that as my background. So yeah, I get to use it now.
Wow. And congratulations to the movie. When will the movie be in the movies?
Yeah, well, part of that is dependent on the world situation here as it relates to all that we're going through. But the hope or plan is that it will be there in late 2022 or early 2023. And so yeah, stay tuned because I'll be talking about that, posting about that, and hopefully getting a chance to introduce people to the set and all kinds of cool stuff as it unfolds.
Wow, exciting. And will you play a role in the movie?
I will be in there in a cameo appearance. So yeah, when you watch the movie, you can watch and see if you can find the guy in the hat. But I don't have a actual role. That's not not exactly my skill set. It's something that I would love to do at some point, but not for this particular project. Yeah.
All right. And my next question is, how did the cafe change your life?
Wow. You know, I left everything behind when I was in my early 30s and went and backpacked around the world. You and I were just talking before we started about different places and travels and the way that that changes you and impacts you. And I had dreamed of seeing the world since I was a little kid. I was very into adventure books. And I guess I never really realized that you could actually do that. You know, I read about it. And so I saw that other people in stories were doing it, but I never quite realized that that was something that I could do. And then when I was in my early 30s, I decided to leave everything behind and to go do it. And so I was out there and just seeing the people in these different places. You and I, again, were just talking about how lucky we are to be born in a place where you get a passport that gives you access to the world. And here I was meeting these amazing people who were just as hardworking, if not more hardworking than I was, and cared of their parents that cared about their kids, and they were just trying to get ahead in life. And they had a passport that didn't give them access to very much. As a matter of fact, they dreamed that they could go one country over where they'd have better opportunities to work. And that transformed me greatly. It made me so appreciative and grateful for what I have. It humbled me greatly because this was not something that I earned. I didn't do something spectacular for the world or for society, and therefore I was given this opportunity. I was just given it because of where I was born. And so I think that challenged me internally to contribute in some way, not just to see the world, but to contribute in some way. And traveling the world also opened me up in terms of my instincts. One of the things I love about being in a place where you don't speak the language and you don't know the culture is that you have to trust your instincts. And it connects us to this internal guidance system, which we have and is so powerful if we use it. And we're often raised to not even realize it's there. And so combine all of that together. And when I came back from this adventure of backpacking around the world, something inside of me said, sit down and type. And 21 days later, the cafe on the edge of the world was born. And it was very much something that flowed through me. I often say that I get to be the one who helps bring people into the cafe. But the cafe is an entity all of itself, that when I go there and I write from there, that the words and the wisdom that comes from the cafe is so much wiser than me. So I don't know exactly where it's coming from, but Casey in particular is especially, especially wiser than I certainly am.
Thank you so much. You just said, like, we did nothing to be born like in a place of the world where we have access to everything. Like, and we have done nothing to be born as a human. Like, I once read the chance to be born as a human and not as a fly, for example, is like 1 to 400 trillion. And in mathematics, people speak about a miracle when something which is so unrare to happen happens, then it's a miracle in mathematics. So you are a miracle, I'm a miracle, but still, wow. And we are born here where we have all the chances. Like you said, we have access to everything. We can travel where we want to travel to. We can love who we want to love. We can learn what we want to learn. And still, we don't feel freedom. We are so free in the outer world, but inside, I think a lot of people can relate to that term, not feeling free inside. Yeah. And for me, when I read your books, it's like you are someone helping people to step in their inner freedom, and by doing so also making use of their outer freedom, because we have these possibilities. But as long as we don't feel free inside, as long as we think we have to follow a certain path, we have to follow like a limited belief system. You know, we have to, like you explained it in the book, like we have to go to school to prepare for university. We have to go to university to prepare for the first job. We have the first job, we prepare for the next higher position. And in the next higher position, we prepare like for our retirement. And then maybe at the end of all this, we can be happy or do all the things we want to do. And this is like putting ourselves in a cell or in a dark room, but we are the ones who can like just switch on the light in that dark room. And for me, like your work is like you help people switching on the light in their dark room and seeing, oh, it's my choice. I can switch on the light. And could you share some feedbacks that people give you? Like, because I can imagine you really change people's life by doing so. What is the most, like, the feedbacks which get you the most?
Thank you. Yeah. So first of all, I appreciate you saying what you just said. And I think of the cafe as a place where people go when they're in pain. And it could mm-hmm. be a small degree of pain, an uncertainty about what my place is in the world or what I want to do with my life. Maybe it's not that things are terrible, but they're just fine. And I seek inside of me something greater than fine. I have the awareness that life is statistically 28,900 days, hopefully more, sometimes less, but that's about what I'm going to get. And I realize that every day passes, I'm a day closer to not having days left. And so I have this internal guidance system saying, I really want to live a life that is special for me, whatever that means. You know, for somebody that might mean being a parent and spending time with their kids. For somebody else, it might mean being an adventurer and going and seeing the world. But we have this drive inside of us to do that, to create that. And so someone might find the cafe because they have that sense of, I'm just a little off. You know, that was certainly the way that I felt for so much of my youth and so much of my teenage years. I would look at the world around me and it just seemed insane. I you know, exactly the strategy that you just talked about, which I do describe in the book, or the character experiences in the book, there's nothing wrong with it if that's someone's path. But it was so clear to me that that was not my path. And yet everybody seemed to be walking that similar path, even though they all seemed to be very unhappy. And I couldn't figure out even as a kid why that was the case. And so I think there is this band of pain that people are in, and they go to the cafe because they can find answers that help them move outside of that pain. And you just asked, what are the ones that really get to me? And so if you'll oblige me, let me pull up something super fast here and read it to you, because this came in recently and it's just so beautiful that I think it deserves to be told as it actually was. So this is a letter that I received very, very recently, and it says, Dear John Strelecki, I don't even know how to start this. Usually I don't write to authors, and especially not via Instagram, but I really hope that you will receive this message. My name is Johanna. I'm 20 years old. I study psychology and I am truly happy, but it's been one hell of a way to get here. Last fall, I moved to a completely new city to start university, but after 2 weeks of complete lockdown, I felt alone. Over the months without friends, family, hobbies, routines, and no places to go, I lost myself more and more until I fell into a depression-like mode, probably one of the darkest places I've been so far. And until then, I had been very blessed with life. I really, truly felt like I had lost touch with myself, the things I wanted in life. Felt like I had forgotten all the things I love, the things I'm interested in, and I've never felt more lost in my life. In May, I finally decided to pull the emergency brake and move back to my loving family. All of a sudden, it felt like I could breathe again, like I could see color for the first time in months, and that was the day everything changed. The second afternoon, a very sunny and bright day, I went to look for a new book in our living room. So I closed my eyes and chose my book blindfolded. And until this day, I am honestly not sure if it was coincidence that I picked your book. Never in my life has a book had so much impact on me. This book picked me up at a point in my life where I had lost myself completely, and it shifted my whole life. Reading the first pages, I could already feel myself waking up from this dark place, and how every sentence described my situation so perfectly. Long story short, it skyrocketed from there. Your book made me find my energy, and it made me do the things I've always wanted to do. So I applied for a job in a cafe, which I love so dearly until this day. I started studying for an entrance exam for psychology, and planned a few vacations with my friends. And through all this, I followed my intuition. And suddenly, everything started to work out and turned out to be just perfect. I am writing all of this because I want you to know how much power your book holds. Enough to get one girl that has always been full of sunshine, joy, and love out of depression. So thank you so much for kind of saving me. Sincerely yours, Johanna.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that is what the cafe is. It is this place where people find, or it finds them. I can't tell you over the years, Sarah, how many letters I have gotten that are like that, where someone says, it fell off the bookshelf in front of me. Like, I was walking through the bookstore and it fell off the shelf in front of me and I picked it up and then I couldn't put it down. And so I've come to realize in life that there are many things that I cannot explain. And I can't quite explain exactly the quantum methodology by which she found that book blindfolded, by which the book falls off the shelf in front of someone. But what I can tell you is that there is an energy flowing through all of this, and I call it the cosmic algorithm of the universe. And that cosmic algorithm of the universe is designed to enable us to live an amazing life by our own definition of amazing. And the question is, will we allow ourselves to trust our intuition, to feel that internal calling? And when we're in pain, to visit places like the cafe on the edge of the world, and to hear the wisdom of other people to enable us to move outside of that pain so that we too can fulfill our destiny. And in the process, we inspire other people that it's okay to fulfill their destiny, whatever that is.
So the cafe is a place of healing, which we find in the cafe, but also in us, most of all. Yeah. And I think healing is something very, very individual. But still, also, it is something collective. We as a collective can heal. And if you heal and I watch you healing, it inspires me to also heal. And this, again, inspires maybe my husband to heal or my friend to heal. So it starts with us, but it's something very collective. And this is, I find your book or your books are like the living proof of that, right? Because it's something, we read it, it's very personal. And it, you know, what fulfills me mustn't be what fulfills you or another person. Sure. But it's like millions of people read the book and millions of people could heal in their own way. And if we allow ourselves to heal, first of all, what we have to do is be vulnerable and to show us vulnerable. And when I read your books, I saw a lot of vulnerability. You showed yourself, even if, I don't know if it's autobiographically, but you know, it's like you opened up and said, hey, I'm kind of lost. I'm lost here on my path. And I don't want to hide that anymore, because that's what we do in life. Or we try to hide our feelings. We try to be the strong one, especially males. Even they have to, they grow up and they have to be the strong one, and everyone has to like succeed in life. And the moment we say, hey, I surrender, I'm not strong, I feel broken, or I'm in pain. And I think this is like the start of everything, and your book is an invitation to that. And this is like a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. Thank you.
Yeah, I think what you just described is something that I've heard time and time again from people that, and this is the way I felt. So when you talk about the autobiographical piece, that, yeah, so much of the character, John, as he's describing what he's experiencing and thinking and going through, is 100% based on where I was at in my life prior to going on this trip around the world. And I think what I felt prior to that, especially when I was younger, was that I was the only one thinking these things, that I was the only one in this state of pain or discomfort or uncertainty or confusion about my life and where I wanted to go. And what I realized is that I wasn't the only one. And so many people have come back to me and said, after reading The Cafe on the Edge of the World, or the Big Five for Life, I realized that I'm not alone, that there's other people going through these same things. And that made them so much more comfortable with their journey of moving from where they were to where they wanted to go, because they weren't alone. And other people had done this and succeeded at this and found their way out of this. And so, yeah, I love that aspect, because you're right. The Cafe on the Edge of the World is in 43 languages now. And that means that that is people from all different walks of life, completely different cultures, completely different backgrounds, who all felt they were alone. And they're not, because they have brothers and sisters in spirit in at least 43 different countries who, despite all these differences, are also realizing that they can chart a life of their own as they wish it to be. And that is super cool. I love that aspect of it.
Yeah, me too. And I while reading your book, I had this phrase coming up. It was like, most of the time we are broadcasting from our head, right? We are like, okay, what do others think? Or I have to succeed, or I have to like pull myself together. And while reading your book, instantly we start broadcasting from our heart, like mm-hmm. the wishes and what do we really want and our pain and like this inner critic somehow, which is like all the time, blah, 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 silence. While reading your book on page 40, 50, I was, okay, he was silent, my inner critic, and my heart was broadcasting. And I think this is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful present you give all of us who are reading your book. Thank you.
If we allow ourselves to trust that inner voice and to trust that intuitive guidance that is connected to that inner voice, it is amazing what we are capable of doing, seeing, and experiencing in our life. And that takes growth. I certainly didn't have that for the vast majority of my early years. It's something that I grew into as I allowed myself to step into the unknown that was in the direction that I thought I wanted to go. And I use that terminology because so often we have a sense that this is the direction that I want to go, but the path to get there seems so covered in fog and uncertainty and nebulous. And I think it's because part of the cosmic algorithm of the universe is testing our conviction. How serious are you that you want to go in that direction? And so very often the first step or multiple steps require us leaping into the void of the unknown, only to discover that the path has been there the whole time. But we won't truly see it until we step into it with faith and just allow ourselves to move in that direction and embrace the uncertainty of it, trusting that our connection to our intuition, our connection to our heart, and our own capabilities are enough to get us there. And the more we do that, the less fearful it becomes to step into that unknown. And you're right, we start to embrace the heart instead of the critic.
And what would you suggest for people who are listening now? What could be the first step to step into the unknown? Because most of us have this idea, okay, we want an exciting life and we feel it in right. our bodies, and we have this thoughts of, okay, there must be more in life, and we feel there is more, but then there's reality, you know, and the unknown can be our reality, because actually this is the reality. The vastness of life is reality, but then we see our life, we see all the bills we have to pay, we see all the things we have to do, the early mornings we have to get up. So how can people, or what would you suggest, where to start? Where can I start my personal journey to the cafe?
Two things come to mind immediately. The first is when you have a great awareness of the direction that you want to go. So in the Big Five for Life book, I call it your Big Five for Life. These are the five things that you most want to do, see, and experience while you're here on the planet. The more locked in you are on what that is for you, the easier it is for you to silence the critics, to silence your own inner critic if you have that, and the easier it is for you to find examples of people who are already doing, seeing, and experiencing what you want to do, see, or experience. Because very often the void exists because we don't know what's out there. What's fascinating though, Sarah, is that before I left on my trip to go backpack around the world, I didn't know anybody who had ever done anything like that. That was so completely foreign in my life environmental experiences. Except then when I got out there, I met thousands of people who were out there backpacking around the world. And what I realized was that, yeah, I'm not going to meet them while I'm in my office because they're out there backpacking around the world. You have to allow yourself to get into the space that you want to transition into in order to find the people who are already there. And so if you want to be a baker, then it's important that you hang out with people who are involved in the culinary arts, right? Cooking, baking, recipes, online portals to good cooking techniques, whatever the case is, but to allow ourselves to move into that space that we want to occupy, even if it's just for a few minutes a day. Because what happens is we start to see other people in that space who not only are succeeding and thriving, but they're happy and they've got it figured out. And they don't necessarily know 100% what they're doing either, but they with confidence are stepping into that void every single day. And as we were talking about earlier, when we see them comfortably, confidently stepping into the void, it gives us courage to comfortably, confidently step into the void as well, knowing that it's not going to turn out to be a catastrophe. And the more you start to experience that in your life, in the cafe on the edge of the world, I call that finding the X on the treasure map. And once you know where the X is on the treasure map, it pulls you, it calls to you. And the rest of life does not seem sufficient anymore because you have now tasted this life that you want to be living. And that's great motivation because that's the kind of thing that will help propel you over the internal fears, over the internal chatter that maybe says you can't do this. So allowing yourself to know with certainty, this is where I want to go, finding examples of people who are already doing, seeing, and experiencing that, and then moving yourself, even if it's little pieces at a time, into that space with them is without a doubt one of the greatest things that you can do.
Thank you. Thank you. And one question, can the big five for life, can they change? You know, what really got me was I heard you saying on a stage that imagine your whole life would be recorded, your whole life, every place you are going to, every conversation you have, everything you're doing. And at the end of your life, there's a museum and there's an exhibition of all these recordings and tapes of your life. And what would you see? Like 80%... in the office with a task maybe you don't even feel related to, with people you don't even feel related to, then maybe 2% answering mails that doesn't mean anything to you, and maybe only 2% with the people you love. So yeah. At the end, what would it be like to watch and to look at this exhibition of your life? And I think this really hits a lot of people because it's like, you know, you're breaking it down also in numbers. It's like, okay, this thing here is limited. Life is limited. And for me, one of the most precious spiritual practices is the confrontation with death. Not in a scary way, but in a way, you know, it doesn't matter how different we are and where we live on this planet and how different our belief systems are and our stories. We all share one thing, and that's for sure, that this day will come when our souls will leave our bodies. But we don't know when this day will be. And so we don't think about it. This not knowing makes us not thinking about it. But actually, everything in life that is limited is precious. So why wasting the most precious thing we have, our lifetime? And, you know, every day I confront myself with this question. If I die, like, how would I feel about my life? What would be my regrets? What do the people I love know that I love them? Did I do the things like my big five for life? And like this confrontation with death is I think it's the like one of the most precious spiritual practices. And to my former question, can the big five for life change? Because if I reached one big five, which is maybe just temporary, Can they change? Did your big five for life change?
Yeah, certainly. So sometimes they can be short term in nature that are more a one time event. And so we were talking prior to this that, you know, you have a desire to go back to South Africa. And so one of your big five for life might be, yes, I want to take my family to South Africa. And then once that's done, you may say, that was great. That was an amazing experience and I'm good. And I've checked the box on that item. And so then you would find something else that you want to move into your big five for life. There can be other things which have an ongoing aspect to your life. So you may say, I want to have a loving relationship with the people that matter most to me. That's one of my personal big five for life. And so that's something that I have that goes on every day and will go on for all the days that I'm on the planet. And so, yeah, so when you have ones that are short-term in nature, don't be surprised that you complete it, experience it, do it, and then you slot something else in there. You may also find that you have something on your big five for life list, and then as you try it, it's actually not what you thought. And so then you realize, oh, you know what? That's not what I thought. And so I'm going to put something else on the list. At one point, I had trying to make the U.S. table tennis team for the Olympics on my list. And the more that I got closer to that, the more I realized that it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. And so then I eventually moved it off my list. So, yeah. And that's the great thing, because you can imagine, and I actually have a very sad but sort of ironic story to this. I remember someone telling me this amazing story about a couple whose dream was to, they thought their dream was to take an RV around the country. And so they saved and saved and saved for decades, right? For 30 years, they saved their money so that when they got to age 65, they could buy themselves an RV and then ride it around the whole United States. So then sure enough, they saved up all their money. They got to age 65. They bought themselves an RV. And after 1 week on the road, realized we really don't like being in an RV. And so, you know, this is why you sample your big five for life as soon as possible, because wouldn't that have been great information to know when they were 30? Because maybe what they would have discovered is, oh, that's not our thing. So let's figure out what is our thing so that we can plan and prepare for that for the next 30 years. So it's okay to sample something that you think is one of your big five for life and realize that it isn't. That just means you've now got space to put something else in there that actually will fulfill you.
That's a great story. I have a question to your own journey, because I think you're a very humble person. You're so successful. Your books like reached and touched millions of people, translated in 43 languages. So yeah. It's a huge, huge success. And still you say, hey, I'm still on my journey. I'm not complete. I stay open. I'm still asking myself the big questions. Why am I here? What am I doing here? And I'm still looking for answers. And I heard in an interview, I don't know where, you were saying, like, for the second book in the cafe, you were inspired by your own, like, dealing with getting older, which I can very much relate to. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I thought, wow, this guy is so real and so humble. And it's not like, oh, I made my journey, I'm complete. I stay open. And how do you manage to stay open and always inquire yourself? It's like kind of an inquiry, right? To ask yourself these questions. And how, second question, do you manage to stay open, but on the other side, still be thankful for what you've got? Because I think for me, it's a very thin line to always strive for, like, fulfillment and stay open, but not say never enough for me. How do you stay open, and how do you manage this fine line between staying open and still be have gratitude for that what you have?
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So the sequence of the cafe books, there was the first book, The Cafe on the Edge of the World, and the main character at that point is about 28. And I was in my early 30s when I went and did my trip around the world, left everything behind, a successful career, everything to go do that. and came back and had the experience of writing the cafe book. The second book, the sequel, the character is, it's about 10 years later. So the book is about, you know, the character is about 38. And after I had left everything behind and backpacked around the world and came back, I thought I had figured it out. I thought I had this perspective on life that would guide me for the rest of my time. And then what I realized is that that wasn't actually the case. Yes, it guided me for those series of years, but I kept changing. I kept evolving. Life kept happening. I became a parent. And I talk a little bit about the parenting experience in the second book of the Cafe series. But then I kept getting older, Sarah. And I was really, really struggling with that. And so the third Cafe book is really about the struggles of getting older. Because what I realized is no matter how in tune you are to what you feel is your path, and no matter how much you're walking that, that the clock accelerates as you get older. And by that, I mean, if you've ever gone on vacation for a week and you know, you arrive at some beautiful destination and you're starting your trip on a Sunday. So you get there on Sunday, you check into your hotel, there's the beach, there's the mountains, it's beautiful. You can't wait to go on all these hikes and swim in the ocean and take a paddleboard around. And it just seems like you have all the time in the world to be on vacation. And then the next day you wake up and you have some breakfast on the veranda and the same thing. It just seems like you have the entire week. And what's interesting though, is that about by Wednesday, you're looking at the phone and your calendar and you're like, holy cow, I only have like three more days left of vacation. Like we're already at the midpoint and I've only got 3 days of vacation left. And then in those last 2 or 3 days, the time just flies by. And the next thing you know, you're packing your suitcase to go back home and you're like, I can't believe vacation is already over. And what I realized in my own life is that aging is very much like that, that there are times in life when things seem very slow. And then there are times as you get older where the clock seems to be accelerating. And as your children's, for anyone who's got kids, they can probably relate to this. As your kids hit a certain age, the time with them starts to accelerate and go faster and faster. And you realize you've only got a few years left and then 2 years left and then 1 year left. And then they're going to be off to university. And then you will never have with them the same thing that you've had for the last 18 years, which is you and them in the same house every single day. And in addition to that, as we get older, our parents get older. My father passed earlier this year. He passed in May of this year. And I wrote in the third Cafe book the struggles that I had with this about being the next one on the depth chart. Like when he passes, he had not passed at the time when I wrote that book, but when he passes, I will now be the oldest guy in the family. And that doesn't bode well, Sarah, because the next one to go is going to be me by default. And I don't know, all of this stuff was hitting me so hard. And I was really, really struggling with that. And I think I was especially struggling with the fact that you have to let go of roles. And I liked being the guy who was in my late 20s, early 30s, backpacking around the world, having the time of my life, carefree, effortless, waking up in the morning, completely pain-free. I could see with my eyes, no problem. I didn't like being 50 and waking up with more pain in the morning and not being able to see as good with my eyes and my eyes are all dry. I didn't like that. I wanted to be 30 again, but you can't be. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do you deal with that? I didn't know. I didn't have the answer to how I dealt with that. And it was really only by going back to the cafe and my dialogues in the process of writing that third book that I found the answers that honestly I could not find anywhere else. So to your question, how do I stay humble? I'm humble because I realize my place on this planet is just a speck of nothingness in the grand cosmic scheme. I look out on a beautiful starry night and not only am I just a tiny grain of sand on my own little planet in my own moment of history, but I am a tiny, tiny, tiny speck of sand in the cosmic algorithm that is all the universe out there. So I'm humble because as much as I love what I do, and I'm very honored that millions of people have read the books and found inspiration through it, 100 years from now, no one will know who I was or what I did or what the impact was. And in the cosmic algorithm, my contributions are meaningless. But that right there is one of the great challenges of life. How do you find meaning knowing that your contributions are meaningless? And that right there is one of the great opportunities. The only answer I can tell you that I've come up with for that is that the minute you do something meaningful, whether it's hugging your child, whether it's making sure that they know that they're loved, whether it's doing something special for yourself or for someone else, the minute you do something meaningful, you give your life some level of meaning. And therefore, it stops being meaningless. Now, it may not be as big as the grand cosmic algorithm of the universe, but it still matters. And so that's the balance. That's the humble, but realizing that you can make a contribution, you can impact others' lives. And that's, I constantly am walking that line because life as it unfolds in front of me is constantly reminding me that that is the line to walk.
Thanks for sharing. Wow. I can absolutely relate through to the age thing. I mean, I'm turning 42 now. It's my son is 17, so I know exactly what you talk about, the dynamic of you know, changing your relationship. It's still very, very beautiful, but it changes and they get more independent. What you want, okay, or we as parents, that's what we want for them. We want them to be happy and to be independent. And but still, what happens to us, right? What happens to us and to know that time is limited also for myself, right? For I always used to be the youngest one who has a kid from all my friends, you know, always the youngest. And now I'm like the oldest mother with the oldest child. And there's a beautiful poem from, maybe you know it, Mario de Andrade. It says, he describes life, and he describes life as a box of chocolate. And he says, in the beginning, when there are still 50 pieces of chocolate, you just eat them, you know, they're just tasty. But then when only 20 pieces are left, you really want to taste them, you really want to enjoy them. And then it's like your life. You don't want to sit in meetings discussing headlines, which means nothing to anyone, right? And you really want to experience life and enjoy life. And he says, like, there are two lives you have. One, when you just live, and the second, when you realize that you just have one life. So I could really connect to that. And I think...
Beautiful.
Also with all my friends and people I know, when they, like, it's like 40 starts to be the turning point when people think, okay, all right, it's not limited, it's not limitless, my time, and I want to enjoy. And I think it's like this equilibrium between, okay, we want to have a meaningful life, and this also gives so much pressure. Yeah. And on the other side, knowing actually we are meaningless completely. So actually that should give us relief also. But it's like, okay, how can I manage this both opposites and find my flow with that? And for me, it's like, okay, what I can feel has a meaning for me. When I can feel it, it has a meaning in that moment, right? Because I felt it. And when I look back to my life or on my life, it's like, I don't know anything about this, all these jobs I had or all these discussions I had, but I know how I felt in certain moments. And most of the times, these are these tiny moments when I brought my son to kindergarten or when I hugged him or when I had a conversation with a friend or when something I really wanted to happened, like when I struggled with my first book and I didn't want to write it anymore. And then, but I wrote it and just to make it through the process. And it's like, how do I feel in certain moments? And it's like a photo book in myself.
And I think that's a great way to think about it, that if you were to flip, let's say using the museum day concept, which we talked about earlier, which is something that I introduced in the Big Five for Life book, that if you were to flip through pictures of every day of your life over 2021 and 2019, 2020, back 10 years, what are the moments that would make you smile? What are the moments that would bring warmth to your heart and to your soul? And I believe what happens is as we're getting older, we're realizing that it is precious, that it's not unlimited, and that we want more of the moments that are the ones that make us truly, genuinely smile deep within our soul. And so that's a good thing. That's an evolution for us as human beings to grow into that mindset. And then, you know, yeah, can it be a little intimidating? Sure, because maybe we don't know the way to go from where we are to that point. That's okay. That's a process. We learn that. We step by step through it and figure it out. And I think that we're designed that way. The human experience is designed that way. Why do we get gray hair? Why do we experience these things? Because those are the biological markers which remind us that we are getting older, that it doesn't go on forever. Mm. Were it not for those, maybe we wouldn't progress. You know, maybe we wouldn't have these deeper thoughts. Maybe we wouldn't make these adjustments in our life that are necessary so that we really do have the amazing experience that we want to have. So, and it also comes down to embracing different roles. You know, that's one of the things I love about going to the cafe, like I said, is when I go there, I walk through that door and I get all of this wisdom coming my way. And it's far greater wisdom than I could come up with on my own. And so in the third cafe book, the character's name is Max. Max is this very old man. And Max is very no-nonsense. Max just tells it like it is. And as an example of that, he says, tell me something that you like. And I said, I like Christmas. And he says, how old are you? So I'm 50-something. He says, well, you got about 28 Christmases left. And when you start thinking of life, these things that you love, and you start thinking how many moments of those do you have left, it is the greatest kick in the butt that you need to get out there and live the life that you want. Because there is a cycle to life, right? There's only one December every year. And if you like Christmas, you're only going to get to experience it once a year. And so to your point about feeling it, embracing it, that means that leading up to Christmas, allow yourself the time to listen to the songs that you love, watch the movies that are your favorite Christmas movies, make cookies if that's your tradition, but to really be present in those moments because you're only going to get so many of them.
And to be present like for other people also who share this moment with you. It's like Maya Angelou said, people won't remember what you said to them, but they will remember how you make them feel. So it's not only about how I remember how I felt, but how do I make other people feel? And this is for me something you stay on this earth. Maybe you will not know it anymore, but you will live in the experience of other people, how they experienced you. And
yeah,
I think it's also, I mean, we are talking about here, our time is limited and we are kind of, okay, not scared, but you know, it's okay. It's a kick in the butt, right? Yeah. But if you think about Buddhism and Buddhism, they say it's, you will be born and born and born again, maybe not as a human, maybe in other forms, until you are enlightened. So for them, it's not a punishment, but it's like, okay, the best thing you can achieve, the highest thing is to not be born again. So sometimes also that gives me some chills.
Right.
Well, I think I've talked about this. I can't remember if I've written about this, but I've certainly talked about it, that as I reflect on the whole existence experience, there's kind of two main possibilities. Either possibility one is your parents had sex, 9 months later you were born, and you're going to get to live out your 28,900 days. There's nothing before, there's nothing after, you just get your 28,900 days. And if that's the case, you might as well live an amazing life. Because there's nothing before, there's nothing after, you might as well go beyond your fears, get out there, do all the adventures that you want to have, create the special moments you want to have, celebrate everybody who's important to you in life, say I love you to the people that matter, don't get so caught up in the petty arguments, and just like embrace it all. That's pretty good news. The other possibility is that you actually were something before you were born. You were a spirit, a soul, an entity, and you decided to opt into the human experience, and you get your statistically 28,900 days. And while you're here, you get to do, see, and experience whatever you want. And then when you die, you go back to being a soul, and then you'll perhaps come and do it again based on what you learned this time. Well, if that's the truth, then you might as well live the life that you want to live while you're here, because you got nothing to fear. You know, it's going to end and you're going to do it again, or you're going to go back and do a life review and then attempt it one more time in a different form or whatever the case is, but that this isn't the end. So what I love about that is no matter which one of those ends up being true, and I mean, I have a personal perspective on it, But whichever ends up being true, you might as well live a pretty extraordinary life while you're here. And that's pretty empowering to me.
Yeah. I think that's the perfect ending for this interview, because that gives us all so much hope. And I can absolutely relate to that. And I think it's odd that we are so scared sometimes, right? So scared about living, like scared of life. And we don't have to be scared of life. That's what you just like perfectly described, because there's nothing that can happen to us. Actually, there's nothing can go wrong. The worst that can happen is that you never lived, right?
I 100% believe that's true. I think that would be the absolutely catastrophic ending, is to get to the end of my life, be in those last few moments, those last few breaths, and look back and have a bunch of wish I would've's. That would be a tragedy. And the easy way to get beyond that, which the character of Mike is also a super wise character in the Cafe books, that's sort of like the guy I aspire to be. And he says, you can't regret not having the chance to do something if you've already done it. And that's just such brilliant wisdom, right? So yeah, if that's the great fear, is I'll get to the end and not have done this, well then go do it. And whether that again is telling your child that you love them on a daily basis, or, you know, starting that bakery that you've always dreamed of starting, or backpacking around the world, or whatever your thing is, but you might as well go ahead and do it. And then you can't possibly have any regrets at the end. And that's a pretty good formula for success right there.
Thanks so much, John, for sharing your precious thoughts with us. Thank you. Thank you for your time. And where can we find you?
So I am available on my website, which is johnstrelecki.com. And I do post thoughts and ideas as they come to me. And also certainly via social media. So if I capture a great moment, picture, et cetera, I post it via Instagram. There's two places to find insights about kind of my thoughts, ideas, and the cafe stuff. There is, for those folks that are in Germany, a Das Café am Rennedevelt Instagram account, which is just coming from the cafe. There's also my personal one. In terms of hanging out with me live, which I really am looking forward to the chance to be with fans together, May 17th, 2022, so next year, I will be doing a 11-city, 23-day tour to share the fourth book in the Cafe series. I'm very excited about this. Everyone met a Cafe character named Hannah, a young woman at 15, at the book three of the Cafe series. We got to know her just a little bit. And you're going to get to know her entire story in the fourth book of the Cafe series. So I am really looking forward to being in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland in May 2022, having the chance to interact with fans again, see people again. And so that will be the place to hang out with me. And this is kind of, I was like, when I was thinking about the tour, honestly, Sarah, I was like, I want to do something so special because we have been not able to interact for so long. And so it's going to be on the tour. We have a tour bus, which is going to be decked out in the spirit of the cafe. So hopefully our next interview, we can actually do in the cafe tour bus. And so fans will have a chance to take pictures with the bus. There's going to be cool iconic artwork on the bus. So it's going to be a whole party. And I look forward to inviting everybody to join that party in May of 2022.
I can't wait to see you on your tour, seeing the bus, seeing the cafe. And of course, I will put all your links in the show notes of this interview. And thank you so much again for your time.
Thanks for doing what you do. You know, as we talked about, you doing what you do and inspiring other people inspires everyone who listens to your show and who sees you doing what you do, that it's okay to follow their dream as well. And that's an awesome gift.
Vielen Dank, dass du zugehört hast und ja, bei dieser Premiere dabei warst. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt noch einen wunderschönen Tag, Abend, wo auch immer du gerade bist. Ciao.